علی جان، مرسی که دعوتمون رو پذیرفتی، در خدمت هستی.
خب یه دقیقی وانسیم نو پندقه شما
میشه هم، ولی خب من گفتم شاید مطلب زیاد باشه، بیشتر بان دلیل.
نه چه مسئله بخ شما فکر کنم از اونه که جمعه شروع میکرده جای شنبه، حالش بله نه شروع میکنیم
چرا؟
کجا شروع کنیم؟ نو چهار دقیقه، حال نو پنج دقیقه شد. خب okay. So let's start today's session with an anecdote. Years ago, when I was a BA student, I had a professor and I occasionally ran into him in an ice cream shop. And he was never having ice cream. His family were, but he wasn't. So this creates a question. This begs a question. What kind of sociopath doesn't like ice cream? And he was a really nice man. He was a really nice professor. He was kind to everyone, but I couldn't see him the same way that I saw him before, after I realized that he doesn't like ice cream. And you know, whenever he laughed, it was like an evil laugh, like ha ha ha, like this, after the fact that I realized that he doesn't like ice cream. And this really bugged my mind, like, why doesn't he like ice cream? Years passed, I never got to know my answer. I became an MA student, and when I was commuting to Karaj, I was listening to an episode of Philosophize This. This is a really great podcast, by the way. It's a philosophy podcast. But if you're going to study MA, you need a theoretician, and philosophers are your theoretician. So I was listening to an episode about Foucault, and it was about panopticon. And then I got my answer. Like, I got my answer. Why doesn't that professor like ice cream? So before getting into that, I want to give you a summary of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It's a really short one. It's a novella, about 60 or 70 pages, based on the format of your PDF or book. So the story has a couple of mentionable characters. And this summary is, by the way, from ChatGPT, so it's not like my summary. You can get it anywhere. One of them is Dr. Henry Jekyll. He's a respected scientist and doctor. The other one is Mr. Edward Hyde, a violent and morally corrupt man. The other one is Gabriel John Utterson, a lawyer and close friend of Dr. Jekyll. The next one is Hasty Lanyell, a friend of Jekyll. Mr. Enfield, a friend of Utterson. And Poole, Jekyll's loyal but increasingly disturbed butler. So Mr. Utterson, who is Dr. Jekyll's lawyer, hears from his friend Enfield about a violent incident where a man named Hyde trampled a young girl and paid off her family with a check signed by Dr. Jekyll. This is, by the way, journalism 101. If you want to get someone really angry, you say a young girl was trampled. Like, it was, if it were a grown man, it didn't matter. Or, I don't know, an adult woman. So the fact that he trampled a young girl is really infuriating. So Utterson is disturbed because Jekyll recently made Hyde the sole beneficiary of his will. Utterson begins investigating the relationship between Jekyll and Hyde. Hyde is described as repulsive, deformed, and evil, though no one can explain why. So everybody hates him, but they don't know why. Eventually, Hyde murders Sir Danvers Carey, a respected member of parliament, in a brutal attack witnessed by a maid. A maid sees Hyde calmly walking, then suddenly and brutally attacking an elderly, well-dressed gentleman who is Carey with a cane. And who haven't thought about that, like beating an old man with a cane? This is really fun. So this is what Hyde does. He beats old men with a cane and he tramples over young girls. Interesting personality. Utterson helps the police trace the crime to Hyde, but he disappeared. After the murder, Jekyll appears to sever ties with Hyde and returns to normalcy, but this is short-lived. Eventually, Jekyll becomes reclusive and refuses to see visitors. Dr. Laniel, previously Jekyll's close friend, becomes fatally ill after witnessing something shocking involving Jekyll and Hyde. He leaves behind a sealed letter. Jekyll becomes a prisoner in his own home. His butler, Poole, asks Utterson to investigate. Utterson and Poole break into Jekyll's lab only to find Hyde's body, apparently dead by suicide, wearing Jekyll's clothes. Utterson reads Laniel's and Jekyll's written confessions, which reveals the truth. The last two chapters, by the way, is epistolary. The form is really interesting. The first chapters are like a detective fiction, then it comes to an epistolary form. Jekyll created a potion that transformed him into Edward Hyde, allowing him to indulge forbidden pleasures without guilt or consequence. At first, he enjoyed the dual life, but Hyde becomes uncontrollable. Hyde commits murder, and Jekyll resolves to suppress his darker side. Eventually, the transformations begin to happen without potion. Trapped and horrified by what he has become, Jekyll chooses to die, ending both himself and Hyde. So this is the synopsis of this story. It's quite interesting, isn't it? I really like this one. Yeah. So there is a potion that the renowned doctor created a potion. He drinks the potion. He becomes Hyde. He does unmentionable things. And how is this related to my professor? For that, we have to talk about Foucault. Can I share something here? I don't really use.
Yeah, for
Google
sure.
There's
the three dots, and then there's a.
Okay, share a screen.
Yeah.
Share a screen window. Let's see if this works. To avoid infinity, share entire screen. Do I have to share my entire screen?
You can do it also, but now also we have your share screen because it's PowerPoint.
Okay, is this working?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So let me check. No, it's not really working. Let me stop.
If you want, send it to me. I think here I can do it.
No, I just shared the entire screen.
Okay.
Don't have anything to hide, except pun intended, by the way. So, can you see my screen?
Yep, it's okay.
Okay, so we covered the summary now. The idea of panopticon is developed by Jeremy Bentham, and Foucault covers it in a book called Discipline and Punishment, or Discipline and Punish. There are different variations of that. He claims that from 1757 to 1837, there is a change of tactics to keep prisoners under control, from public to private and abstract. So what does he mean by that? Before that, before 1757, when someone committed a crime, it was common to publicly punish that person, or in worst cases, execute that person. So Foucault says that there is a change of tactique for that, because there are a couple of reasons. First of all, what if the public thought that the punishment does not relate to the crime? For instance, if someone stole, I don't know, bread, is this suitable to execute that person? So the public would judge whoever is responsible for that execution. And this execution was a form of showing who is in power. It was a display of power. So the kings would intentionally display these executions to show the people that look, we are in charge and we can do whatever we want, and look at what happens when you commit a crime. So Foucault says that there is a change, first because what if the punishment is not suitable for a crime? The second one is that what if the execution goes wrong? What if, I don't know, if they are hanging that person, the rope breaks? Is that a sign from God? Should that execution be stopped? Is that a sign from God to show that, well, the king is not my, it's not, I didn't choose the king to be here? Or it raises doubts about the authority of the king. So there is a change from public to private and abstract. And there are benefits to that. First of all, there is this benefit of you don't know who is responsible for what. So in most developed countries, when you see someone being executed, you do not know which organization is responsible for that execution. You might criticize, I don't know, the president, but the president says it's not my job to say that who should be executed. You might criticize like different organization, but no one takes responsibility for that. So before, the king wanted you to know that he is responsible. Now there is a need to hide your authority. So there is authority, but you don't know who is responsible for something like that. The other one is that instead of harming their bodies, as this is here, instead of harming their bodies, you can control their mind. So instead of killing a person, you're wasting a human life. Maybe that person can be a worker or something. Maybe that person can still be useful to the society. Instead of wasting a human life, maybe you can change that person. And then comes the panopticon. So this is the panopticon, the picture. It's a building where the warden can see every cell, but the prisoners cannot see the warden. And here comes the idea of Jeremy Bentham. Jeremy Bentham is, by the way, you might heard his name from utilitarianism. It was in Norton, but not this panopticon specifically. So the warden can see the prisoners, but they cannot see the warden. And there are surveillance, normalization, and examination. So what does he mean by that? By surveillance, he means that the warden can see the prisoners if he wants, but what if there is no warden in this picture? What if there is no warden here? The prisoners doesn't know that. They think that someone is watching them. So the prisoners feel that they are constantly under surveillance, and so they stop doing something that they think they might be against the law. And the second one is normalization. So in prison, they define what is normal and what is not normal. So, and this is also depends on the society. In a society, maybe long hair is normal, in another maybe it's not. So normalization doesn't have a strict definition. It is defined by the society, or as Foucault says, by episteme of society. And the third one is examination. So if prisoners behave, they get good scores. If they don't, they get bad scores and they stay in prison. Jeremy Bentham calls this new mode of obtaining power of mind over mind. And here it gets interesting. Foucault says that we can extend panopticon to everything, school, mental institution, factories, etc. The purpose of punishing people is not justice. It aims to make people docile or docile, it means obedient and useful. Society creates a definition for a normal person. Thus, people try to be normal in order not to get punished. Eventually, every person becomes his or her own warden. Before getting into strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, let's talk about the professor I mentioned. So there are rules unwritten in the society. A professor cannot lick an ice cream cone in public. There is no rule against it, but he cannot do that. And think about the other rules that there are in the society. Foucault basically says that this world that we are living now, is a panopticon. We are constantly under surveillance. If you think about it, it makes sense because there are CCTV cameras over everywhere. Your phone is being tracked. You are constantly being surveyed by government, by your friend, and you become an accomplice. You take photos of yourself and post them publicly. You take videos of yourself and post them publicly. So you become an accomplice in being under surveillance. And then comes the normalization. So in a society where things are called normal, but they are not normal, let's not get into that. But there are things that are not normal, but are defined as normal to a society. And we are forced to accommodate that. So for instance, if we lived in a society where everyone was fat, for instance, if someone was fit, that person was not normal, and that person needed to change himself or herself. And there is no written rule in that. Like, there is no written rule in the government that if someone is fat or not fat is a criminal, but it's a cultural thing. So culturally, you become a prisoner and you have to constantly survey yourself. So you are on a diet, for instance, you are starving yourself, but you don't know why. The only thing you know is that it is normal to be fit. I am under surveillance. My friends are judging me. My family is judging me. And it gets funny here that every person becomes his or her own warden. So there is a point where when you're your own warden, so you're imprisoning yourself. You say that, well, when there is no one around you, you do not do something because you're afraid to be judged. That is it. You want to be accepted in a society. That is what we are after. Maybe not in the teenage years, maybe. There is a rebellious spirit in that years. But after that, you want to be accepted. You want to be loved. And you look around and you think about what is normal to do. Like, what is normal to wear? Fashion is something that is changing, like, right? So you're trying to change yourself to be normal. And at the end of the day, there is this examination that you have to pass. Like, you ask yourself, am I a good person? But good is relative, isn't it? You cannot say this person is good based on this criteria and say that, well, another person is also good, but there are different criterias. When the criteria is not strict, everyone can be good. So what does it say about good? It means that it is relative. It doesn't have a meaning. And this comes to mind when you think about why if something is normal in my country, it's not normal in another country or vice versa. So normal is also, yeah.
No, go ahead, finish your sentence. Then I want to just add an example.
No, go ahead. It's fine.
To be honest, exactly when you're just mentioning this, it's pops in my mind the things that I have experienced here. For example, exactly for us, nail leash, it's not for a man. But here I see a lots of boys and men that they nailish their nails and they are really super cool. Also, they have a really, really long hair. I didn't talk about normal one until your shoulder, really long hair. And somehow the first time I'm just shocked in the library, I see these boys. But then you see it's also okay. Because of that, it's not normal for me, but normal for them, maybe.
Cool. Are they in metal bands? Are they musicians?
I don't know, to be honest. I just remember one time I also see a person who's sitting down and it's back behind me. I just looking at it and I'm just thinking that, oh my gosh, such a beautiful hair. Then when he just turned down, I see a lot of beer, mustache, and I'm shocked. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't have such a long and beautiful hair. Good to you, boy. It was really crazy. But yeah, you're right. Sometimes normal, it could be what we adapted to, or sometimes the things we grow up in a family, we think, okay, everything that it's behind that or out of this comfort zone, maybe it's unnormal. But no, it's not.
Yeah, exactly. And this is I don't know if we can call this a project, but when we look at, for instance, at enlightenment, morality is universal. If something is right, it is right. That's the end of it. But when we
Yeah.
come to romanticism and individuality is rising and people can have their own opinion, we start to think that, well, maybe not. If something is right in, I don't know, in America, it doesn't mean that it is right in Africa. If Christianity is good for the United States, it doesn't mean that it can work in Africa. And it's Foucault is considered postmodernist, and it is the peak of postmodernism that culture is relative and culture does not have a strict meaning. You can deviate from the meaning. But yes, a lot of other things that are normal in another country cannot, not even a country, a city. Like I live in Qom. There are things that are normal in Qom that are not normal in any other city. Or there are things that are normal in Tehran that are not normal in other cities. So things are different. And this is what Foucault says, that to shape people's mind, governments created panopticon. And he has a great point, I guess, especially when he says that the point of punishment was not justice. So we see in a lot of countries, not just at or not just ours, but in America, for instance, if someone embezzles billions, goes to prison for a year, but if someone steals a car, goes to prison for 10 years. Foucault's point is that if someone can get into a system to embezzle $1 billion, that person is already normal. That person looks normal, acts normal. That is why he could thrive in that position. But if someone steals a car, that person is not normal. His looks is not normal. I don't know, or maybe her looks is not normal. This is 2025. Everyone can steal. But the point is that the point of justice was not, the point of punishment was never justice. And yeah, that's it. So let's go to Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. So when we come to a strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, everyone has a feeling of disgust toward Hyde because his posture is not normal. That is one of the reasons they give for hatred toward Hyde. When Jekyll, in the middle of the story, begins to participate and even host parties, his friends think that he is fine again. When he deviates from the norms of society, his friends think that he is sick. They become worried. And I have to remind you that this is a Victorian piece of work, and Victorian literature is usually known for being prudent, for being repressed. That is not always the case. For instance, we have Gabriella Rossetti, Gabriel Dante Rossetti, who was not prudent. But usually, when you say Victorian literature, the first things that comes to mind is being repressed and being prudent. So in a society like Victorian era, a doctor like Jekyll cannot express himself, cannot express his feeling, cannot express his desires. He has to repress himself. So in a society like that, people, what do people do? They participate in tea parties, they participate in parties, things like that, to be social. Being sociable was really important to Victorian era. And yeah. So when he doesn't participate in parties, his friends think that he's sick. They become worried because, well, he's not Victorian anymore. What is wrong with him? Jekyll himself is his warden. He does not feel responsible for Hyde X. And this is also an interesting point that Jekyll does not feel responsible for Hyde X, I don't remember if Lanyell mentions it or Utterson, but someone mentions what Hyde did, and Jekyll doesn't react at all. He thinks that Hyde is a different person, while Hyde is a creation of Jekyll, not even a creation, is himself. So he thinks that Hyde is not him. He's a good person, and by good he means normal. He claims that he could control Hyde. However, when he faces the reality of his impotency in controlling Hyde, he commits suicide. He cannot stand the idea of not being normal anymore. And the reason for his suicide is that he is his own warden, and he realizes that, well, I have to face the music. I'm responsible for the death of a young, the death of Carrie, an old man who was beaten to death by a cane. And I can't stop laughing at this. This is a fun way to die. Being beaten to death by a cane by a random person on the street. Like, I don't know. My paranoia is rising when I hear this. Yeah, this might happen to you tomorrow or tonight. I don't know. Watch out. So, Jekyll realizes that he has to face the music. He has to take responsibility. And there comes a moment that he turns into Hyde even without the potion. So he cannot control himself and Hyde. Then he commits suicide. And that's it until now. Do we have any questions or any points? Anyone wants to add anything? Let's just get this session interactive.
Yeah, it was really cool. Team, now if everybody has a question, you can write it down into the message or turn on your mic. That we prefer to turn on your mic, your video, to see you, contact with you. No question?
Okay, we can continue. So,
Okay.
yeah. So when you read the novel, a question that might pop into your mind is that why does Jekyll creates a potion to become another person? Why doesn't he just kills another person as Jekyll? And that is where we again go back to the Panopticon. So Panopticon is with you from the birth. It's basically the ideology. So Jekyll, he grew up in a Victorian culture where he has to repress himself, where he couldn't express his desires, and he is his own warden. So his solution is that I don't have to be me to do something. And that is the reason that he creates a potion, because if Hyde does something, it's not Jekyll. And we see that even today, like if someone wants to mock someone or rob someone in the street, they are usually high on drugs because their brain is not really working. Oh, that's some, yeah. So their brain is not really working. The reason for creation of the potion is that Jekyll just wants to be respectable as a doctor, but also he wants a release and he doesn't want responsibility for that release. And this comes to mind that if Hyde and Jekyll are like this, how are we related to that? Because the point that Foucault makes is that we are not really evolved, we are not really improved as humans, we are not different from 500 years ago. If that is a point that Foucault makes, we are not that different from Jekyll and Hyde, who I guess it was like 150 years ago. How are we related to them? How did we manage to create an alter ego that is our darker side, does something, but we don't have to take responsibility for it? And this is where we come to postmodernism. But also, some people say that we're living in digi-modernism and postmodernism is over, but let's just call that we are postmodernists. So in postmodernism, with the invention of internet, we have access to social media. So what can we do in social media? We create an avatar or an alter ego of ourselves. Some people want to be themselves on social media. Some people create a fictitious character, like a man can create an account as a woman or vice versa. Someone can create an account with an unusual name, like no one thinks about it. Someone can create an account with that unusual name and does things that he wouldn't do with his own account or her own account. So for instance, let's go back to my professor. He had some limitations. One of them was that he couldn't have had ice cream in public because of his job, because if someone took a picture of him, he would become a meme. What else couldn't he do? He couldn't follow his student on Instagram, or maybe he couldn't message them on Instagram, and he couldn't be a pervert, basically. But what if he creates a fake account, follows his students, messages them, or does something that he is not allowed to do? Isn't that the same as the potion? He doesn't take responsibility for it. If you say to him, well, Dr. Felani, we are investigating a case of harassment, and we think that maybe you are a person behind that account, he wouldn't take responsibility for that. He is exactly like Jekyll, until maybe he's too far in this, I don't know, journey, or let's just call this an evil journey, and he realizes that, well, I have a wife, I have children, what have I done? And then he commits suicide, like Jekyll. But basically, social media becomes our potion to become someone that we are not. And not just the fake accounts, even our own account. You can create an account if you live in a small city where you are afraid to be judged. You can be what you want on Instagram, for instance. You can talk about things that you never talk about with your family. You can do things that you have always restricted yourself to do that. Finally, we have a question, or a point maybe, by Jungle Bird. Maybe this is a way of escaping the restrictions of superego and satisfy the desires of it. That's one way to look at it, yeah. But to your point, Jungle Bird, what Foucault talks about is how society shaped us, but what, not really. You're right. You're kind of right on that. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
But, you know, I think the panopticon of the society, family, city, everything, if you won't think about it deeply, it makes you to be unreal. If you're not really afraid of judging, or you don't care, maybe you didn't do that. What do you think about this?
Well, what Foucault says that is the point of panopticon is to make you obedient or docile. So they want you to be scared of trying new things, for instance.
Exactly, that's the point.
Yeah, because you start to question, and who knows where that questioning would go. And yeah.
Yeah, I think because of that's the question about, for example, the really obvious example that you're mentioning about the social media's account, or sometimes I can also mention that in not just our sessions, In the virtual sessions in the university, nobody didn't turn on their camera. It could be another one that sometimes they're scared about judging. They don't want to use their faces. Also in social media, some people didn't use the real picture in their profile. So it could be one reason also.
It is, and of course they are afraid to be judged, because why wouldn't they? Everyone is judging everyone. I don't use a picture on social media. Like, why would I do that? Yeah, that just fires up my insecurity about, like, yeah. And it's hard. It's hard to show yourself. And I
Know,
don't
to
know,
be
maybe.
honest, yeah, go ahead.
No, you go.
Maybe I'm talking about the experience that I had it here, that it's totally different from Iran, the Europe, that they don't care about anybody. They are like this sign, it means who cares or don't care about anybody, about judging. Whatever they want, they wear. Whatever they want, they do. Also, in their social medias, I see. So it's a little bit complicated to see. Sometimes I myself think about it that maybe because our society, maybe because the way we grow up in a family, because of that, we are like that. Because everybody, relatives, friends, judge us, or here they don't care what's going on.
Yeah. How good is your Italian? Are you still in Italy?
Yes, I'm still in Italy. Maybe 20 days later, I will be in Germany. But to be honest,
Okay.
Italian people are perfect.
Yeah, so what is the Italian word for Aberu?
Oh, I don't face this yet. Don't tell you.
Yeah, I think they don't even know that. So when you have a word like Aberu in your culture, and
True.
you cannot do most of the things that you want, it's obvious that you feel bad about yourself. So when your parents say that, well, don't wear that, you're gonna Aberu, or
Yes.
don't talk like that, or don't laugh out loud, don't LMIA. So I think it depends on that, but there are things that they are more evident in, maybe, I'm not sure about Europe, but this is, for instance, in United States. People are more afraid to be fat in United States than in Iran, for instance. Maybe not the newer generation, because they don't care, and also they are connected to the world, and there is a movement against, for instance, body shaming or stuff like that. But the thing is that until something is not normal, you're afraid to do it. And the moment that it becomes normal, you want to do it. Like, what is it stopping you from doing that? So I remember when I was in high school, I guess. If someone found out that you listen to, I don't know, metal, you would be considered crazy,
Crazy.
because that was not normal. But nowadays it becomes cool. Like, you become cool by listening to metal. And there are, like, other things in. For instance, I remember a phase where everyone had to listen to Radiohead because it was cool to listen to Radiohead. People just wanted to be normal and accepted. And the same goes in, like, Twitter and Instagram. You see people talk about things that they don't usually talk. Maybe they don't even usually believe that, but they just want to be part of a group. So they say controversial things to be accepted. But in the end, what is going on is that, well, Foucault gets kind of murky, because there is no panopticon example. Like, there is no prison like that. That is a critique of Foucault, that panopticon was never that big of a deal. Okay, so this is just one narrative of panopticon. And after Foucault, Deleuze continued his work into societies of control. And we can see that now, because when Deleuze was talking about it, he sounded paranoid at that time. But now our ID is electronic. Our what else? Almost everything is electronic. Like, even if you own a house, its certificate is electronic. So government can deprive you of your identity. They can block your ID. They can take away your house. They can take away your SIM card. So what Foucault talked about and Deleuze developed became this, that we are living it. But again, it's not the only narrative. For instance, this is biopolitics, by the way. The combination of things that I mentioned is biopolitics. But also there is necropolitics. Necropolitics means the power to choose who lives and who dies. And it's not just death. It's not just dying. It's about the possibility of death. So, for instance, as Iranians, we are living in necropolitics because we are expendable. We can die at any moment. There might be another war. And this is usually explored by African theorists and philosophers like Achille Mbembe, or Mbembe. His name is hard. And he says that a lot of countries never developed enough to become like biopolitics. They are still necropolitics where there is a government who wants you to know that who killed who. So Foucault said that one of the reasons that the execution went from public to private was that the government didn't want people to know who is responsible for the execution. But there are countries in the world who want people to know who is responsible for the execution. And that is also a point that you can think about, that there are countries that they are still not developed enough, or there are countries that their government doesn't care to execute in public or things like that.
Yeah, that's totally true. Also, I want to add something else that you said about Freud talk about that prison we didn't had it. But I think we had another example also in the literature, Book Thief by Zusak, something like that, the writer. Exactly the same in that part of also I watched the movie and read the books. Both of them are available, but a girl tried to be like a thief to have a knowledge and read the books, but this governments and society also burn all the books that the people has. They don't want the people has this knowledge. Also in that part, exactly we can apply the approach of the Freud about panopticon society, because everywhere they are really conservative. Governments try to have lots of cameras in the lives of the people, so it's really complicated. But as you're mentioning, most probably in the politics we can mention this panopticon.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. But if you look at educational system, that is also a place where you can propagate your ideas. So a lot of things that we learn in school are basically things that prepare you to be obedient, or religion is a part of that, educational system is a part of that, police force is a part of that. Yeah. And
That's true.
it's crazy that things that are considered normal are so rootless. Like, there is no, we don't know how. It's like hereditary. Like, it just got to us and we carry it to our next generation, maybe. It's hard to think how different would we be if we didn't have internet. I often think about it. I think I had access to internet when I was 12 or 13, and I wonder how different my life would have been if we didn't have internet. How different our morality would be, because there are things that we considered immoral before that, and that is a complaint that older generation makes, that the new generation is immoral because we are different from them. Yeah.
True. Also, Jungle Bird mentioned something else that's similar to what Freud mentions about the function of metaphors in our dreams to escape the superego and satisfy our otherwise dangerous desire. These wheels in reality are used to escape the panopticon that society has built. True. And Sonia says, like our parents. That's true. For sure, about the family, and I want to mention a family issue, but it's not the issue. The parents also, exactly, they try to, for example, grow up the children by the way their parents taught them. So they are exactly in this circle. They sometimes we didn't ask why, we said okay because our parents told us, because we try to obey this. We didn't think about it. To be honest, I have this challenging a lot when I came here, because for everything, maybe really normal things that for them it's really ridiculous, for me it's a challenging to think about it. Is it normal? We weigh our way something else. Okay, maybe they have their own way. And here I think a lot about this challenging to, is it true? Is it false? Maybe it's not about true or false. They have their own way, we have our own.
First, I have to ask Jungle Bird, are you an MA student? I think you're really onto something. That is a really good point. I haven't seen anyone connect Freud to Foucault, because postmodernists usually use Lacan. But this makes totally sense. This is a good point. Maybe there is something to explore in the future. Yeah.
Right.
But also there is a fact that if you don't know that another reality exists, for instance, if there were not an internet, you would not have any repressions to see in your dreams. If the only reality that you know is the reality that you're living, the only things in your dream is your hatred toward your parents, for instance, that becomes a metaphor, not just your disobedient, like not your social disobedient. Yeah. And also about what you said, yeah, I totally understand, because my family is originally from Aslani Ashrafieh. They grew up there, my brothers grew up there in Rasht. And I remember my mom, for breakfast, she would have rice, because that was the only commodity that they had. And I once said that in my school. I said, hey, what do you eat for breakfast? What do you have for breakfast? And they said this, that. And I asked, don't you have rice for breakfast? I said, what? Why would we have rice for breakfast? So even in a family, like what was normal to me was not normal to my friend at school. And that is scary, because sometimes we are zealous about what we believe in. We think that it's the only truth, it's the only way to live, until we are challenged. And even then, if you're stubborn, you never change. You just double down. You say that, well, this is the only way we live. Whoever doesn't live like this is not correct, or it's immoral. I don't accept this. But if you're willing to challenge yourself, there is still a lot of work to do. Like, this is something that you are doing, obviously, but it takes a lot of energy, and you're constantly shocked. Like, what is this? What am I looking? Why are they happy? Can people be happy? Like, this is.
The loss of culture shock. Oh my gosh, I cannot tell the sneer 1 year that I had it here a lot, and sometimes some of them are really totally crazy.
And that is the good thing about dormitory. Like, I remember in MA, I was really scared of dormitory. I thought, well, there are different kinds of people. I don't know if they're clean. I don't know if they're polite. I don't know what they do. But it's really fun to see how other people lived and thought that that's the only way to live. And I'm like them. Like, I'm the same person. I lived a way, and I thought that this is the only way to live. And then when you compare your lives together, you realize that most of them are stupid. We doubt ourselves. We say that how did we even believe in this? Like, how was this possible? Am I that stupid to believe in this?
Yeah, that's true. Dormitory also has their own world. I think it's another level because also in my bachelor degree and MA both I was in the dormitory and it's taught me a lot.
It's good if you're flexible, but if you're not trying to be flexible and challenge yourself, it's gonna be
True.
hell. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's it, I guess, for me. I don't think I have anything else to add. Just think about most of the things you believe in, and think about why do you believe them. Maybe there is another way to live. Maybe this is not your own understanding. Maybe there is another world. But again, my MA thesis was on kinda on the loose, and if you realize that what you believe in is not, it's not correct, or it's not the way you want to live, be flexible. Maybe this is the only way you can live right now. Maybe, I don't know, maybe if you realize that you don't get along with your parents, maybe that is what you have to do for now until you can get away. Like, don't be hard on yourself. It gets really long if I want to enter nomadic subjectivity, but Google it. You'll understand what I say.
Yeah, true. It was marvelous. Thank you, Hadi. If anybody has a question, wants to add something, we are all ears. And
Barely.
thank you, Fatima.
یکی از دوستان داشت صحبت کنه، صداش خیلی کمه.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't.
آره،
نه
بهتر شد.
صداتون یه کوچولو همچنان ضعیفه.
سلام، چجوری؟
Yes, سینای عزیز.
سلام عرض
مشتی
میکنم،
که
خوش
زد
اومدید برنامه.
جام
دمتون
مشتری که زدی درست شد.
گرم. مشکل از اون است. خسته نباشید، میگم خیلی جلسه خوبی بود، لذت بردم. فقط خواستم یه نکته اضافه بکنم، یه کتاب معرفی بکنم درباره همین موضوعی که صحبت کردیم امشب. یه کتابی هست، حالا ربطی به ادبیات نداره ولی خب جالب خوندنش، همه دروغ میگویند. کتاب اینجوری شروع میشه که یک متخصص داده است که به جای اینکه بیاد به روش سنتی اطلاعات رو تحلیل بکنه، دسترسی داره به سرچ های گوگل و میاد اون سرچ ها رو بررسی میکنه و تحلیل میکنه و به نتیجه گیری میرسه و متوجه میشه که اون تحلیلایی که از مثلا نظرسنجی های حضوری انجام داده بودن با این تحلیل های جدید کاملا متفاوت، یعنی کاملا مقابل هم دیگه است. خیلی کیس های جالبی رو بررسی میکنه. مثلا یکی از کیس هایی که بررسی میکنه شب رئیس جمهور شدن اوباماست. وقتی که اوباما رئیس جمهور شد همه فکر کردن که این قضیه نژادپرستی داخل آمریکا دیگه تموم شده و یک وارد فاز جدید شده، ولی میاد بررسی که میکنه میبینه اون شب سرچ کلمات نژادپرستی به یک حد قابل توجهی رسیده و حتی ثبت نام داخل سایت نژادپرستی 10 برابر شده. و همین ایده رو مطرح میکنه که انسان ها وقتی ببینن که تحت کنترل نیستن و افراد دیگه قضاوتشون نمیکنن، اونجور که دلشون میخواد فکر میکنه و رفتار میکنه و داخل جامعه به یک خودسانسوری شدید انجام میده. این ایده رو وقتی که این داستان رو خوندم، این ایده کتابم به ذهنم رسید، گفتم که مطرحش کنم، شاید دوستان علاقه داشته باشن که مطرح.
مرسی، دست هم کنه. فقط دو تا نکته، یکی این که من برای یکی از دوستام دارم میپرسم این سایت های نجات پرستانه رو کجا میشه ثبت نام کرد، و این که و این که گفتی ادبیات نیست، واقعا چی ادبیات؟ با ما دانشجو ادبیاتیم، هرچی میرسیم میخونیم دیگه، زیاد فرق نداره. این آقا هم من الان عکسشو دیدم یادم افتاد که من یه جا دیدمش، حالا یه ویدیو یوتیوب دیدم یا تو پادکست بوده. خوبه دیگه بابا، اصلا شاید بشه استفاده هم کرد ازش، من نمیدونم چطوریه، چون چیزهای عجیبی تو ادبیات استفاده میشه ازش. مثلا من چی بود، یه یاروی ایل وایزمن اسمش، آره بذار اسمش، این چون نوشتنی سخته، این مثلا تو آرکیتکچر خیلی داره کارهای جالبی میکنه. یعنی چون یه چیزی هم ما داریم دیگه، اسپیس کریتیسیزم داریم، بعد تو اون نگاه میکنی یه چیزای عجیبی داره اتفاق میفته. مثلا میگه تو واقعا باید آرکیتکچر بلد باشی تو درکش کنی. آره خلاصه میگم هر چی دیدی ادبیاته، سخت نگیر.
مرسی سینا عزیز، قربان شما، متشکرم و موافقم با هادی. شب شما هم بخیر. که ادبیات کلا خیلی گسترده است اتفاقا، وارد هر چیزی میشه، پس به نظر من هم هر اثری میتونه اتفاقا چیز در دل ادبیات جا بگیره، بستگی داره به چه زاویه دیدی داری بهش نگاه میکنی.
یکی کامنت گذاشتم، حس بدی بهم دست داد، گفته که داشتم راه میرفتم خیابون رو گوش میدادم، بعد یادم افتاد که من گفتم ممکنه الان یکی با اعصابت حمله کنه اینا. امیدوارم که سالم به خونه برسی، حالا هر جا که هستی اتفاق نمیفته، نگران نباش، ما امنیت داریم.
جالب بود، دکتر ظریفی بود. مرسی، متشکرم هادی جان، بازم کلی مسئله جدید گرفتیم، بسیار عالی بود دیدگاهی که بررسی کردی و مرسی که تایم گذاشتی.
خواهش میکنم، مرسی از دوستایی که اومدن، مرسی از شما، مرسی از برق که نرفت، همکاری کرد، مرسی از اینترنت، آره مرسی از همه دیگه. حالا
نه در جریان، واقعا اوضاع هستم، واقعا ناراحتیم، ولی خب هیچ کارش نمیشه که، امیدوارم فقط اوضاع بهتر بشه
دیگه. این نرمال جدیده دیگه،
واقعا نرمال زیده. یعنی من وقتی میبینم ماما اینا مثلا وفق میدن تایم حتی حموم رفتن تو، تایم بیرون رفتن تو باهاش، یعنی اینجوری که دیگه نرمال شده، یعنی من اینو پذیرفتمش و این اصلا نرمال نیست، اصلا نرمال نیست.
دیگه حالا همینجا تمامش کنیم دیگه، بلش کن. بله شبتون خوش، خوشحال شدم که دیدم و نظراتون رو شنیدم و جانگل به پیگیری کن، شاید چیز ازش در اومد، واقعا از همین جا شروع میشه اینجور چیزا، حالا شاید هم نشه ولی شاید هم بشه، نمیدونی که، منم نمیدونم.
عالی، آره واقعا پوینت خوبیه. مرسی، ممنونی باز ازت، مرسی از بچه‌ها که تا اینجا همراهمون بودید، شب خوشی را آرزو می‌کنم.
خدافظ،
خدا نگهدار. خدافظ.